Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome you to join in on the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us get to the topics of the day, and we'll begin by introducing the panel. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. With great anticipation, I look forward to our time in Tanglewood tomorrow.
Tomorrow, live from Tanglewood on the press porch at Tanglewood, and that'll be going on tomorrow morning, so we won't have our normal panel. You guys know that, right?
Yes, we do.
Check your schedules. I thought I'd let you know. Thank you. Director of Journalism Program at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And Corporate Attorney Rich Honan. Very nice to have you back.
Good morning.
I was
nice
practicing.
To be here.
Excellent. Good
I was
to
practicing
you
on Facebook all last night with friends to go up against you today, but okay. I actually am completely exhausted. I may just
rant and rave.
Was
the media project just exhausting? Is that what was going on?
It was. Alan was off on tangents and just crazy.
Sounds great. Okay, so let's go to, there's a lot to talk about in the news and a lot going on. And I do want to begin with the video and the capturing of the aftermath of the police shooting in Minnesota. I'll begin there. A Minnesota man was fatally shot Wednesday night by the police during a traffic stop in a St. Paul suburb, and the aftermath was captured in a grisly video streamed live by a passenger in the car. It was at least the second fatal shooting this week of a black man by police officers, and both parts of encounters were recorded on video. The Justice Department will investigate they're investigating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
actually, they said they were coming into the other case.
To the Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge police.
I don't know about the Minnesota. Right. So what do we, again, it seems like we're back on, we're back into the cycle again.
Were we ever off of it?
Yeah. No.
It, right?
Well, no.
It's just
we
more
weren't
of the same, right?
Yes.
More horror. I mean, we saw the spectacle of a 15-year-old boy crying on television yesterday because his father had been killed. And there's no explanation, and there's no resolution in sight. And I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like we're making any progress in whatever, even agreeing on what the underlying issues are,
exactly,
let alone making any progress in resolving any of those issues.
It's hard to think what you can do. Donate money to Black Lives Matter, march with them. I don't know. It's horrendous.
The footage was extraordinary in that the woman began by calmly narrating what was happening as she trained the camera on the man, whom she described as her boyfriend, and on at least one officer who was pointing a gun through the driver's side window. "Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him," she said. "You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir," which certainly appears to be the case on the video.
Well, I heard it. I was horrified. I was horrified. It's one thing when, you know, you got a potential felon with a gun. It's another thing when a guy's reaching into his wallet, as each of us might have done, to bring out a driver's license, and you put 4 bullets into them. That is really as bad as it gets, especially because we have now, thank God, frankly, the whole idea of a videotape going or a phone going, and you hear her saying, respectfully, officer, you just shot my boyfriend. I can't believe you did that. You put 4 bullets into him. All he was doing is reaching into his pocket to give you a driver's license.
Well, there also is a gun control issue here, too. The man identified himself as a gun owner. He said he had a gun in the car. He said he had a permit to carry it, and he was getting his wallet, and then he was shot. And the officers plainly thought he was not reaching for his wallet.
Now, let's see whether the gun lobby comes out in support of him.
Yeah, exactly.
And when it comes to this, I mean, if you we've heard a lot over the last year and a half since many of these such incidents have occurred about body cameras on the police officers. What would that have done in this case?
What do you think?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it would be great. I don't think they want it. I don't think anybody wants it. You know, we've had the calls for having videotape cameras in classrooms, so to evaluate the teachers. Would you like that, Rosemary?
No, I wouldn't. However, I'm thinking of the Baton Rouge case,
yes.
Where that one, not that you grade these on which is the worst, but that was horrific that a man is held down by two officers and then shot point blank. He was not, he couldn't do anything. And then the result is, if you look at the video, it's all blurry.
Right.
And the cops say, oh, in the struggle, both of their cameras fell off. So we're seeing that cameras are not, that they certainly are bringing this, these horrible incidents to light, but they're not going to cure it. They're not going to stop them.
But there was another video, of course, of the Baton Rouge case, which was searing and very concerning. Officials from Governor John Bel Edwards to the local police and elected officials vowed a complete and transparent investigation and appealed to the city after a numbing series of high-profile, racially charged incidents elsewhere to remain calm. I'm just interested of how you kind of go without being affected by what has happened in other cities and other places.
Well, but you are affected by it, but hopefully people are trying.
Well, it's not stopping.
Well, you don't know that. Are you telling me it's not stopping it, that there's no incidents nationwide? I agree with you, but I don't know. I don't know that we have enough data points to determine whether there are now a fewer, whether there's now a lower percentage of these things happening. I mean, you know, I don't know how many encounters there are, you know, in a given day. And I don't know if the percentage of, you know, these tragic events is reduced or not.
Yeah.
Well, we are connected, as we have all mentioned so many times, by social media. We are connected by, immediate, by the time this poor man was shot yesterday night. You woke up this morning. I was driving along, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we heard the whole thing. The whole thing was right there for everybody. And of course, it's always interesting to get something like the British perspective on American guns.
Oh, my European friends are horrified. I get a notice from them whenever one of these occur, which is distressingly plentiful, many times.
Far too frequent.
Yeah, far too frequent. I am happy that the Justice Department came in right away. It took longer than this for them to go into Ferguson, for example. I hope that they are putting it together. I, unlike many Republicans, don't think that the FBI and the Justice Department are broken or rigged.
Tom,
I don't think the FBI is broken. I think the Justice Department is clearly broken. If you look at the amount of times that it's been held in contempt just over the last few years, and I don't know.
It's been held in contempt. What do you
well,
mean?
Well, Eric Holder, and then most famously, just in the last few months on the immigration case. You know, the whole immigration case. There was the immigration executive order, and then it was stayed by a lower court. And just recently, the Supreme Court was unable to overturn the stay.
A decision they disagree with is not the same as holding them in contempt.
No.
They rigged
the
system.
But in that case, the lower court judge just recently held the Justice Department in contempt and ordered that every Justice Department lawyer, I'm not going to say he made an actual holding of contempt, he ordered that every Justice Department lawyer involved in the case, no matter what state they're in, had to go to mandatory ethical training because the Justice Department had lied to him, saying that they were not processing any of the immigration applications. And he kept asking, he said, you're not doing the applications, right? And they said, no, Your Honor, you're not. And then a few months later, they said, well, yeah, we kind of were. 100,000.
Oh, yeah. That proves it. The whole Justice Department is broken.
I think when you have the Department of Justice being held in contempt by federal courts,
I
think that department
judge.
is
mm-hmm. Yep.
That's not the only one. This Justice Department has been held in contempt more than I'm going to say more, certainly more than its predecessors. But I don't think the FBI is broken. I think the FBI is kind of laboring mightily against the tide, but.
I want to pick up on something that Rosemary said, and that is that these police departments in the old days, that there was a feeling, oh boy, if the Justice Department comes in, it's a bad thing. Now these localities are immediately saying, we're turning this over to the Justice Department. which is
But that's not the police departments do it. That's the localities,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
That's the local governments.
Sure.
I don't think the police departments are necessarily looking at it.
No, and for good reason. I've gotten into trouble with one local DA, not here in New York, because I made the point that police departments, district attorneys, and others tend to work together and need each other. This guy took great exception to that.
I think police departments are the local government. We saw that in Ferguson. They were working hand in hand with the local
sure.
government to make money by exploiting poor people and black people.
I think police departments are clearly the most visible portion of the
local government.
Yeah, I certainly
definitely.
Agree with that.
I was just going to say, and with that said, I really think that the people in blue who are doing this work, if they're doing it professionally and right, are real heroes in so many ways.
I wish we heard from more police about how horrible this is. We don't.
Yeah.
We
That's
don't
a good
hear
point,
from
Rosemary.
Let's hear from a couple of letters before we go to a news break, and then we'll move on to a lot of political talk.
Okay, we'll do that as soon as I get this thing right. Okay. Sharon says, "Dear panel, having every single police officer in America outfitted with a video camera will certainly document the injustices and the violence, but will do nothing to address the underlying problem, which is racism, violence, anger management, and the culture of training of police officers in this country. Major reform and re-education is necessary," to which I would add to Sharon the idea that we have subjected an underclass in this country to horrible indignities, and some of those folks will act out. I mean, I don't think there's any question that kind of thing can happen. Yesterday morning, right here on Central Avenue, I was walking from one building to the other. It was 4:10 in the morning. We have it on videotape, and there was a guy doing circles on Central Avenue
in a car.
No, on a bike. One of those guys on a bike, circles in Central Avenue. I said, this doesn't look good. I ran to the door, and he came right after me. And as I opened the door, there he was, staring me right in the face, all on videotape during this time. And it was scary. I'll be honest with you. It was very scary. And I said, "I'm calling the cops." He said, "Why are you calling cops?" Scary. And I think police officers have to put up with some of the worst of this too.
I think it's a tremendously difficult job. I think whoever wrote that letter, I certainly agree with her as far as, you know, all those as being causes. I don't think that those are the exclusive factors, the ones that she named. I think there's other factors as well, and I think they all need to be discussed if you're really going to make any inroads on this.
Michael says, "When did we stop expecting police officers to take risks? As party to the social contract that underlies police power, I expect them to almost always shoot second," said Michael. Yeah, I think it's reasonable.
Well, they are taking, and now, I mean, they are taking less risks, right? I mean, you saw how the crime rate in Baltimore went up
right.
when they stopped going into, you know, and said, "Hey, look, if this is what's going to happen, we're going to be different in the way in which we perform our duties."
Hillary talks, says James. "Good morning, Joe. You do a great job on the roundtable. I'm a true moderate. I can only tolerate roughly 15 minutes of Fox News or roundtable without exploding. Yesterday, Roundtable hit an all-time low. I understand your show takes pro-liberal issue and rubber stamps your approval of the DNC, but the panel buys."
We get our orders.
I haven't checked them yet.
Yeah, we just talked
to Debbie this morning.
Yeah, but the panel's biased opinion of the Hillary email server was so over the top. Are rose-colored glasses handed out when your panel enters the studio?
Rosemary-colored glasses.
Rosemary stated that Hillary only did this crime 100 times. Yes, I paraphrase. What do you mean paraphrase? You're just wrong. If you didn't say that.
What he means is that there are only a few.
A small percentage
of the total
emails.
Number of
yes.
emails.
And I said if one of those, and by the way...
And the State Department, by the way, is saying even those were not really secret. This is a dispute among intelligence officials.
Okay, but I happen to agree with James in a way. I said to you...
Which seems to
have been ignored, that if one of those really did compromise, not 100, but if one of them compromised American security, it would be a bad thing. And that's why we have the law. Sorry, Rosemary.
Sorry, I don't believe it did. I mean, what's lost in all of this is that she was sending emails to other people who, like her, had top security clearance. It's not like she was even sending it to reporters.
Well, I think, but the issue, and I wasn't here yesterday, thankfully.
Oh, I played your role.
You're here now. That's bad enough.
But the issue, I don't think the issue was who she was sending them to. I think the issue was who had access to them. The people that she did not intend to send them to and that had access to the server.
There's no evidence that anybody got it. Even the FBI in its strongly worded scolding has said they could have gone elsewhere, but there's no evidence they did.
Well, that's the whole purpose.
As opposed to other State Department official email that has gone out.
I'm so sorry, Rosemary. That's exactly the point. That's why there's a statute. That's why they got beaten up by Hillary, got beaten up by the New York Times and the Washington Post, hardly bashing.
And I do believe that the entire system of security and our government systems needs to be improved. There's no question about that. What she's been caught up in is a discussion about how to do that. And she's being made to be a scapegoat for doing what previous secretaries and other secretaries outside of the State Department have
Rosemary,
done.
Rosemary, that's such an overused talking point, and it's so wrong because
Can we hold that till after the break?
I'll hold that thought. We'll
get like
you just want to calm me down.
I want to read more about it and get you all worked up, and then we'll get going.
Right, we'll segue into that.
There you go. Let me just take a break, and then we'll be back, and then we'll get into all this. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan and Rosemary and Rich, join us this morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, and we'll continue the conversation after this. We've been talking about this all week, but the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server is over, according to Attorney General Loretta Lynch. She made that declaration yesterday afternoon in a brief written statement. She said she accepted the FBI's recommendation that no one be charged in the case, which has engulfed Mrs. Clinton's presidential ambitions for more than a year. This from the New York Times. She said, quote, "I received and accepted their unanimous recommendation that the thorough year-long investigation be closed and that no charges be brought against any individuals within the scope of the investigation." The announcement by Mrs. Lynch came on the eve of a congressional hearing this morning as Mr. Comey, James Comey, the director of the FBI, is scheduled to testify about the email investigation and the decision not to pursue charges. Rich, you haven't weighed in on this yet.
I was responding to Rosemary's point before the break that it's the liberal talking point that you guys always trot out that previous secretaries
you
of
guys,
state have done
oh
this.
Oh my God!
And the answer is that no one has ever done it again without permission of the State Department.
Hillary Clinton has been caught up in a big dispute about what is classified that intelligence officials still disagree on. The FBI, Comer yesterday said how many, 100 or something of 110 of her emails were classified. The State Department came out later and said, no, they were not classified. If the professionals can't agree on it, how would a jury ever decide on it? There's no way this case could ever be prosecuted. It is something that you should fix. Yes, let's fix the classification system. Let's decide who goes on servers and make a law that works. But Hillary Clinton, to persecute her is ridiculous.
They did have a law that works, Rosemary. She just didn't follow it.
No one followed it because it was unfollowable.
I don't know.
Well,
the New York Times.
She's the only one in the history of the world who did not follow it.
New York Times.
Colin Powell. Casper Weinberger.
He didn't do it without permission. She did not have permission.
And permission from whom, Rich?
From the internal people, either secretaries.
She did. She did. And the president himself has said, I don't think she did. It was a mistake, but I don't think it was breaking the law. If the president, who is her ultimate boss, has defended her, how can we say, oh, no, it's wrong? The FBI did the right thing. And, in fact, the FBI made as strong a case against her as they could. They said, sanction her. Take away, you know, classification rights or don't give her a briefing, which Ryan has jumped on. But she did not violate law. And that's the issue here.
If you can find a lawyer, it's not me, but if you can find a lawyer who can tell you the difference definitionally between very careless and grossly negligent, then I will believe you. But
I think if Comer thought that, he would have indicted and found a prosecutor who could. Here's my question. If Trump won, oh, God, I shake as I say that, could he bring back the charges?
Yes.
Well, you can't double jeopardy.
She hasn't been on trial, so he could reopen the case.
And he has said again.
I guess he could reopen the investigation. I don't know why he would.
And he has said again. No, he won't. But he said again and again, I'd put her in jail.
Yeah, but I don't think he can't put her in jail unless he truly does become the dictator he's promising to be. But here, I think.
I guess
technically he could reopen
the investigation, I guess.
But if he's won, why would he?
I don't know to what end.
I think that I am more and more convinced that Bill Clinton knew exactly what he was doing in that meeting with Loretta Lynch. And he saw this lingering. The FBI was sitting on it because that was incredibly damaging to her. And he forced their hand. I don't know whether he did her a favor because the explosion in reaction since has been so enormous. It's almost as if she were indicted when you hear the reactions.
I think everybody in America clearly thinks he knew what he was doing when he met with her. I think the jury's out on whether she knew what she was doing when she met with him. Yeah, I mean, clearly.
I don't think she was fighting for her job as.
No, I agree.
A job in the future as Trump has tried to.
No, I don't think that's silly. I don't think so. I agree with you there. But I think that clearly the talking or the plan was going to be that Justice was going to accept whatever the FBI recommended. And so you have to believe that the negotiations that were going on Saturday and before that were, okay, we're not going to indict, but here's. Here's the tongue lashing you're going to get,
right.
But then somebody needed to lock down that Comey's recommendation not to indict or not to charge was so undercut by his statement that you had to make sure that the attorney general was not going to say, hey, what you just said, everything you said in your statement constitutes a violation of the law, so I need to look into it.
Right.
So I agree with you. I think that was
right.
What
it was
Bill
extraordinary
to
and
avoid.
Outside the usual thing that the FBI does, which is even if they clear someone of criminal charges, they usually don't even make a statement. I think it's justified in this case, and I understand that he did it. I am impressed that Paul Ryan has rigged up four congressional committees today that are going to listen to Comey and Lynch, and he has the right. Too, I get it, blah, blah, blah. Let's listen to it. It's politics. But why can't he do that on gun violence, too? Why don't we have a bunch of committees looking into the horrible crimes going on in this country because of guns?
Well, of course,
I think it makes me really cynical about government.
I don't know if you were on when we were talking about this. I said, look, we came close to. Oh, no, you were on. You and I were talking about the background check bill that we thought should have.
They should have passed it.
I think politically it's silly, obviously, I'm sure that he's bowing to pressure from his members.
Right.
But.
I get it, Rich. I get that it's politics, but doesn't this make you cynical? If you're a young person in this country who is supporting Bernie Sanders, hoping for government that's uplifting and for the people, wouldn't that make you very cynical? We don't talk about gun violence in a congressional committee, but we're now going to have four committees on the FBI investigation after nine committees on Benghazi didn't do anything.
I understand.
It's awful.
But Rosemary, don't you concede at least partially that part of that cynicism has to come from the way in which the Secretary of State is being given this kind of deference?
I don't think she got deference. I think she's being put through hell.
I think, well,
all right, should we move on?
We disagree on that.
We got a lot of letters.
Okay.
Well, yes. I do appreciate when Rich is on, however he's wrong. People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, stay objective, Rich, and stop with the red herrings. Do you want to talk about negligence? Clinton's emails don't compare with President Bush's, and so on.
5 million emails disappeared from the Bush White House. They had to do with picking state prosecutors who did not toe the party line, and they just mysteriously disappeared.
Clearly a matter of national security. Keep going.
Oops, forgot to sign. Lame defense of Hillary. Okay. The left's defense of Hillary is who's had the Latin in here? Tu quoque straw man.
I'm supposed to know what that means. I don't. I failed that part of the bar.
Okay. All right. And James Brown said, a good topic for the Media Project may be the non-enforcement of key provisions of Cuomo's touted SAFE Act. Okay. Here we go. John says, I love Rosemary. She's one of the most intelligent, thoughtful, and experienced commentators I've ever heard. her insight on journalism, public affairs is unmatched. I truly love listening to her. However, she clearly,
I was waiting for the bot.
However, she clearly has an Achilles heel. Anything remotely critical of Hillary Clinton in these issues, she unfortunately transforms into an incessant defender of Hillary. Wow. It's actually become comical at this point. Rosemary, you're better than that. Snap out of it. These are real issues.
I can badmouth Hillary better than any of you. I think she lied about Benghazi. I've said that from the beginning. However, in this setting where I'm arrayed against a bunch of people who don't support her, yes, I do take a strong position. But it's not absolute. I understand what her flaws are.
Rosemary, says Dan, without knowing it, Rosemary is making HRC supporters look wicked bad, by not remaining calm and allowing others to make points. But then again, the entire process is corrupt, so this point is moot. Brian says to Rosemary, I'm a former police officer, and from the Baton Rouge footage I saw yesterday, and with no other facts to go on now, I don't think that guy should not have been shot. As for the Castile shooting, the video I just reviewed after the fact, is after the fact, so I can't comment. If we believe the girlfriend, then it's over. But the police officers don't forfeit their due process right when they put the uniform on, so we have to wait.
Thank you. Good letter. I appreciate that.
Okay. Wesley says, for Rich, nothing excuses what Hillary Clinton did, but how could, quote, having permission to use a private server make the classified information more secure? Mm-hmm. Well, if what the rule is that you have to have permission, and who do, as the head of WNC, who do I ask permission from?
No, I think it's more than if she had gotten, if they had known about this in some official capacity, you would like to believe that the State Department, you know, IT people would have been more involved with the server, and not just Hillary's private people.
Let's see here. I'm a law enforcement officer. Any use of force by police is dangerous, damaging physically and emotionally, and it's not the preferred course of action by any officer. We are trained to respond to situations. Most officers get it right. Some make the wrong decision. They face consequences. Even if they make the right decision, they face consequences, internal investigations, suspensions, PTSD, etc. Use of force has more than one victim. This incident took the life of a man, a father, someone's son, will never change. Sometimes the officers are the ones that don't go home, and that's also tragic. There's no easy answer to this question or easy fix. Respectfully submitted. That's from Matt.
I think that's very well said.
Okay. Gary and Abby say, you go, Rosemary. Hillary's emails didn't kill 30,000 Americans last year and this year and next year, and that is a matter of national security. And Reginald says, hi, is there any suggestion that Hillary's email was sent to people who shouldn't have gotten them?
Or
no. Other than procedural violation, is there any substantive injury,
no.
Harm? I'm trying to read person's letter.
I'm answering his questions.
No, actually, his question was, is there a suggestion? And of course there was a suggestion. In fact, I think the FBI actually affirmatively said, we assessed that it could have fallen into the hands of foreign government.
There's no proof, they also said.
No, but that's why they have the rule, Rosemary. That's the whole point.
I think the whole thing has been turned into a national security matter falsely in order to attack Hillary Clinton.
Well, that probably is true.
Who made a procedural error.
So what you
error.
Don't want to do is make a mistake. Okay, Bill Clinton that made, you know, bad mistake in the White House, probably not important. It became very important politically. Hillary took money to address groups that I don't think she should have done before she ran for president. It's a matter of judgment. That's what I'm thinking. Okay, so Reginald says, did we read Reginald yet, Joe? Hi, is there any suggestion that Hillary's email was sent to people who shouldn't have gotten them other than procedural violation?
We just read this one.
Yeah,
we did. Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah, thank you. And somebody defined tu quoque, Latin for you also, or the appeal of hypocrisy is an informal logical fallacy that intends to discredit the validity of the opponent's logical argument by asserting the opponent's failure to act consistently in accordance with his conclusions. And
nice.
Like
well done.
Philando Castile, I'm sorry, my dog needs to go out. Have you discussed Philando Castile, Mary? We have. We discussed the deaths.
That's the missing...
Yeah, you got to get up a little earlier.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We have more to talk about. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Book Loft in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a destination of imagination and discovery for readers young and old. TheBookLoft.com. Alarms of Berkshire County, offering full-service residential and commercial security and life safety monitored systems based on individual or corporate needs for nearly 35 years. AlarmsofBerkshireCounty.com. Hilltown Artisans Guild, Worthington, Massachusetts. Juried show of art and handmade items this Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4, Town Hall, Worthington, Massachusetts. HilltownArts.com. And Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, celebrating 25 years of preserving the Victorian mansion with gardens, wraparound porches, Romanesque pool, fountains, and more. UnionGables.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan make up the group this morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. President Obama announced revised troop plans for Afghanistan on Wednesday, keeping 8,400 U.S. troops in the country when he steps down early next year, the clearest indication yet of his inability to end the long war there. Quote, I strongly believe that it is in our national security interest, especially after all of our blood and treasure that we've invested in Afghanistan over the years, that we give our Afghan partners the very best opportunity to succeed. Obama made the remarks at the White House. He had hoped to leave a force of 5,500 in 2017, so a difference roughly in about 3,000 troops.
Yeah, I had wanted, if Rich weren't here, I would have said, thank you, George Bush. But then he'll say, when? It's been 8 years. Why isn't he taking responsibility? So I have to acknowledge that. And I wish he had pulled the people out. I don't like our soldiers being there. We cannot win. However, to totally abandon Afghanistan now is to turn it over to Islamist extremists.
Yeah, and
there's no choice.
Yeah, and we actually have the proof of that because that's what we did. That's what we did in abandoning the forces in Iraq, and
yes.
We ended up with the vacuum that was filled by the Islamic State.
Just terribly handled for two administrations now, and the effect is being felt by our military. Horrible.
Yeah, and the problem is, you know, what do you do? Sometimes I think an administration, when you speak for the country, you sometimes you have to just stay with a policy. Stay the course.
Yep.
And so, for example, you know, everybody talks about, oh, if the Republicans come in, they're going to get rid of Obamacare. You know, and you kind of wonder, is that, you know, while I'm no fan of it, you wonder, is that really the way you want to govern, kind of lurching back and forth? You know, so you have somebody in power for 8 or 12 years and then somebody else then undoes everything. You know, at some point you have to say, look, that, you know, somebody made this call and they made that call in the name of the country. And, you know, I kind of wonder if we spend too much time undercutting. And I say this on both sides.
It's true.
We spend too much time and we just end up back at stasis.
We have a
on
huge.
On the other hand, bad decisions have been made in the past.
Sure.
And we have to take responsibility for those bad decisions. And then we have to see where we went off course. Lyndon Johnson, I hate to go that far back, but, you know, Bay of Tonkin and all, you know, we ended up having to get out, and it looked terrible for the country. And all
sure.
the predictions
yeah.
of the dominoes didn't turn out to be correct. And the Vietnamese are among our best friends right now. And so, you know, sometimes you just have to say we were wrong.
Yeah, and the question is whether
it ain't now, by the way.
Yeah, and look, we're going to be in Afghanistan. We're going to have a sizable force in the Middle East for, you know, forever.
Our lifetimes.
Well, for
yeah.
everybody's lifetime. I mean, that's the fact. I mean, you have your military where you believe there's going to be trouble spots, and that's where it's going to be. I don't know that you can, you know, I would love to blame it on Obama, but, you know, and you would love to blame it on George Bush.
I do blame it on George Bush.
I don't know how you are ever going to maintain any type of power without having a military presence in the Middle East. I just don't. Mm-hmm. If somebody could come up with that, you know,
well,
I'd love to sign
Trump
on.
Came up with it. Trump basically said, I think, if I'm not misquoting him, that we were better off with Saddam Hussein than with the hell that we've gotten after that time.
He blames Bush. That was the destabilizing thing that we did.
Well, but you... Okay. By the way, I agree with that. But the other side of that, I think, is do you really want a guy pulling people out of meetings, having them summarily executed? Of course, it happens in China. It happens in other places.
It's not our business, though.
Okay. Well, yeah, but more to the point is not so much what he was, I mean, speaking very, you know, very in a very mercenary way. It's not so much what he was doing within his own country. It was the fear of what would be done against our country through him or his
not
proxies.
Not us, but the British have investigated how we ended up in war. And the ruling, the study decision was that the U.S. led Britain and other allies into war before all the evidence was in and before all the initiatives for peace were taken. And that's devastating.
Well, you do forget. I'm not going to relitigate the issue. I'm not a fan of having gone in. But you do forget. How many, first, what was going on at the time, you know, kind of post-9/11.
It was right after 9/11.
But also you forget how much evidence there was of, quote, weapons of mass destruction and the abject refusal to allow any type of inspection, you know, and just, you know, after time and time and time again, I just think that the confluence
of those
factors.
And what I most New York Times was a big supporter of the war. Judith Miller's reporting supported the administration, and it only came out later that she was talking to the same few people that the administration was. Horrible. Right. The press abdicated responsibility to get at the truth after 9/11.
Yeah, but, you know, leadership, you know, right or wrong, leadership is you don't always have the data set that you want, right? Yeah, you have to decide whether a decision has to be made,
right.
And that might have been the wrong call there. But once you've decided that a decision has to be made, you have to make it on the available facts.
What do you make of the British report?
The
British report I just referred to that said the decision to go to war was made before all the efforts at peace had been pursued and before all the information was
in. You know,
it was pretty devastating, but it's years late.
Yeah, I just registered for a comment. The Beeb this morning did have Tony Blair defending himself, and it was not a very convincing defense. And the guy who was interviewing him gave him a very hard time, but basically he said to George Bush, whatever you want, buddy, I'll do it.
But came out in the report.
But they I mean, at the time, we were saying to Hussein, just show us something.
Hussein,
give us something. Hussein
brought it on in the same way that the ISIS is now bringing it on against them. ISIS bombed Medina. It's the second holiest city of all Islam, and bombs it.
Yeah.
So the complaint that we haven't had moderate Muslims fighting with us, that's going to go away.
Yeah,
ISIS is bringing it on.
That's interesting.
So, yes, Saddam Hussein absolutely did that. But we know enough about the way he worked that we should not have fallen for that, I think.
Well,
I do know it's hindsight. So.
And you have to look at it in the, you know, we had just suffered the 9/11 attacks.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I don't want to invoke the name of Cheney because then everybody will lose their minds.
War criminal.
Close to that, Rich, is Joseph, who writes to us and says, the people who made out were the bomb makers and the makers of planes, Humvees, ammunition, make a fortune for both wars and continue to do so. You talked about Cheney.
From the beginning of history, that's true. Of course.
That doesn't make it any better.
No.
We should know better.
No, I don't think anybody's advocating war, right? Unless you think that's...
But I think Joseph's comment, which is that, look, we know who was making the money out of all of this, is relevant, and the American people have to step in at some point.
Sure, but I would ask Joseph, what's his plan for defending against the likes of ISIS and Hamas and Islamic Jihad and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda Arabian Peninsula and the Taliban? What's his plan?
So is your plan to build more major ships for billions of dollars and submarines, which we don't need? Is that the way we're going to turn this around?
My plan plan is to acknowledge the issue and have a global, I don't mean necessarily mm-hmm. physically global, but I mean an overall panoply of options available to us. And one of those things, unfortunately, has got to be military force. If you could come up with a better idea that's more effective, sign me up.
Well, this is another discussion for another day, but it could go on for a long time. I just think
it will.
I just think you're wrong.
All right. We'll end there. And thank you all for writing in. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Rich. We'll be at Tanglewood tomorrow. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.